Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. In this episode, Lars Jensen, lead developer at GoTo, chats about the cloud native and Kubernetes ecosystem with Casper Neeson, lead platform architect at Lunar, and Frederick Monson and Lasse Hoyga, both software pilots at Trifork. Created for developers, by developers, GoTo gathers the best minds in the software community. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in Chicago, Amsterdam, and Copenhagen, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Welcome, all three of you. I'm here in Aarhus. We just finished GoTo Aarhus last week, and I have the pleasure of sitting here with three of our speakers from the conference. We have Casper Neeson, Frederik Monson, and Lasse Hoyga. Thank you very much for coming here to spend some time with me. And I was hoping that we could do a quick round of introductions. So if you would start, Lasse.
Yeah, sure. Lasse Hoyga, I work at Trifork. I do cloud infrastructure, and I do backend development, infrastructure, architecture, stuff like that. I'm a certified Kubernetes administrator, as you guys also are, I guess, unless it expired. And I've been working with cloud native and Kubernetes for, I don't know, 3 years, I would say. Before that, I worked in something that wanted to be cloud native, but had some regulatory issues, let's say that.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm Frederick, and I work at Trifork Public, doing mainly cloud and security and infrastructure for big health setup in Denmark at the moment.
Cool. My name is Casper. I work as the lead platform architect at Lunar. We are a sort of a fintech turned bank, got a banking license a year and a half ago, something like that, and just been building a cloud-native bank ever since. I also am a Cloud Native Computing Foundation ambassador, which means that I spend some time during work and in my spare time organizing meetups, and we sort of created this, we call it a meetup alliance across the Nordic countries, Cloud Native Nordics, and we basically just try to help each other out with organizing meetups. We just before COVID hit, we had some road shows where we were sort of sending speakers across different cities. So it's basically just trying to help each other out as much as possible. And yeah, I work a lot with Kubernetes and all cool cloud native technology in my sort of day-to-day job at Lunar as well, and build the platform there.
Okay, that's interesting. So I brought a few questions with me from home just to sort of get the conversation flowing, but feel free to jump in and derail things whenever you see fit. So my first question is a bit of an introduction to people who might not know too much about Kubernetes. So what I'm wondering is cloud native the same as Kubernetes? My gut feeling is that cloud native is a bit of an older term. Kubernetes is a bit of a newer term, but these days I feel like I can't see one without the other. And it feels like Kubernetes has sort of become synonymous with cloud native. So what is your take on that? Is there a difference, or are they actually the same now?
That's a really good question. I think that, so cloud native, the term cloud native is, and the Cloud Native Computing Foundation is a foundation that are sort of hosting a lot of different projects, one of them being Kubernetes. So if you are, I guess, if you're using, let's say, Prometheus as a monitoring tool and other different cloud native projects, you can probably be cloud native without actually being sort of without Kubernetes. But there's a lot of sort of in the definition of being cloud native, there's some things that you are sort of doing in a way. You're doing containers, most likely. You are orchestrating these containers, you're running microservices. So you probably need something like Kubernetes in there to actually deal with all of that, because there's a lot of things when you're running microservices, you need a way to actually orchestrate and manage those microservices.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be Kubernetes though. Like before we had Kubernetes, we had Mesos, so we had Docker Swarm. And now I see that that Nomad is also picking up steam, which is another container orchestrator. So I think that Kubernetes is the most popular one, and it's the most obvious choice for a lot of people, but it's not the only container orchestrator. Mm-hmm. And I think that is like a strength in the cloud native space, that we have these tools, we have these concepts of an orchestrator, and we have a concrete implementation, which is Kubernetes, which is really, really good, but it's not the only one, and we can sort of switch that out. And if you have, if you don't have the need for the thing that Kubernetes are good at, well, go for something else.
Yeah, exactly. That's also what the CNCF is trying to provide. It's providing options for different problems out there. And there's a different, in many cases, there are multiple different projects that can solve some of the same things in the ecosystem and the projects that are hosted within the CNCF. Not container orchestration. That's probably something they're missing, but Kubernetes is maybe a sort of a standard that we are, a de facto standard, at least we are sort of building on top of within the cloud native ecosystem as yes. It is right now. But yeah. Yes, you can choose other solutions. I guess Docker Swarm is still out there.
It is still around. Yeah. You see it somewhere. But yeah, I mean, in Denmark at least, Kubernetes is definitely the go-to tool for both the new projects and for projects that have been for a longer time. But we do see other orchestrators around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's also, I think that because all the big clouds, they have a managed Kubernetes offering, it makes it easy for you to go to Kubernetes. I don't know if anybody has a managed Nomad offering, probably, but I don't think that Google offers one. I don't think Amazon offers one, but they do for Kubernetes. And that gives you this agility in theory to move clouds. And yeah, I think that's also a strength, and that I think that makes Kubernetes a good choice, that you can run it anywhere basically. And you can get some people to run it for you.
Exactly. And also what we've been sort of seeing over the past couple of years with the introduction of custom resources in Kubernetes is that we are sort of extending Kubernetes to more than what Kubernetes was in the beginning, right? So we are sort of standardized around Kubernetes, and we are now building on top of Kubernetes. So Kubernetes has become this thing that we sort of, in most cases, put in the middle. And we sort of build our platforms on top of Kubernetes.
Yeah, and yeah, it's really been a revolution that we have an API that is so well defined and at the same time so extensible that you can just about extend it to anything. That's really one of the big differentiators of Kubernetes right now. Also compared to the other container orchestrators, they can't do that.
No.
Maybe we should elaborate on what custom resource definition and extensible API means.
I think that's a good idea. So if you could just put a few words to what's a custom resource definition.
Yeah. So in Kubernetes, we have the native Kubernetes resources of how you actually run an application, or you get some configuration into an application, or whatever it might be. There's native resources that are sort of within Kubernetes.
Yeah, you can almost think of them as types in a programming language.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the option to add your own custom resources. Like an example could be that I want an PostgreSQL instance that are managed somewhere else or something like that. Then I can create a custom resource saying, this is a PostgreSQL instance, and then you have something that are sort of doing this for you, applying this for you. But it could be many different things. The operator sort of framework and pattern that are sort of very popular these days within this ecosystem is that you build some kind of, you have this custom resource that are how you sort of the options that you want to give to your customers. And then you have an operator, some kind of software code reconciliation group that are doing some stuff, managing an application or rolling knows how to update a distributed system running on top of Kubernetes or whatever it might be. It can be anything, mm-hmm. basically.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come. I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, I think that's a good definition. Yeah, and the when you define this custom resource definition, you define basically the structure or the options that you want to expose. So that's the schema of the custom resource definition that you expose to the end user. And then you have the operator that is operating on the resource and sort of instrumenting it or running it.
Yeah. And one of the most powerful parts of this is that this is exactly the same way that Kubernetes is doing everything as well.
Yeah.
Right. So you have the native resources, as you said, and the custom resources. And from the user's point of view, it doesn't really matter if I'm interacting directly with Kubernetes or with some extension that I added to Kubernetes using these custom resources, using an operator from whichever company. The workflow is the same, and the endpoints I can use to take out metrics, the endpoints I can use to see if everything is running as expected is the same and is consolidated for both the Kubernetes native applications and controllers, resources, and the extensions that I add in.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with something like with kubectl or kubectl or whatever sort of side you're on here in terms of naming and using kubectl, but I just call it kubectl. So you say kubectl get pods, you can say kubectl get databases or get users or whatever. You are just extending Kubernetes to be whatever you sort of want it to be.
Yeah, and we see that taken to the extreme with something like Cluster API now, where you, inside Kubernetes, you define a custom resource that is the specification for running clusters. So you can say, I want a cluster, and then you apply that information to one Kubernetes cluster that has the custom resource definition. Then inside that cluster is running an operator that will then go and create a custom Kubernetes cluster for you in whatever cloud or whatever environment you're running in. And that is like mind-blowing. That you're taking it to the extreme. You're running something in a cluster that is creating other clusters using the same API that everybody uses. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard of a project. I can't remember the name right now. Maybe we'll put that in the notes. Where they actually took out the base resources from Kubernetes. They removed pods and removed deployments and removed services. They removed everything besides custom resource definitions. So you just have the API server. You don't have any controllers besides the API server, basically. And then, so I want to run a cluster where I can run pods. Then you apply the custom resource definition for a pod and a deployment. So you have a base layer that's almost as minimal as it can be. Then you plug in whatever you want. I'll see if I can find a link for it later.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, be able to sort of select the features of Kubernetes that you want to use and put your own in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to have completely stateless clusters so you don't apply the daemon set or the stateful set resource at all.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you think that's one of the reasons why Kubernetes has become so popular? That is like the extensibility of it and how you can tweak it to your needs?
I think it became popular before these custom resources were really a big thing, before changing Kubernetes was one of the things that people did. Why it became the most popular one is difficult to say.
Yeah, we had the container wars or container orchestrator wars back in 2017, something like that, with Mesos and Docker Swarm and Kubernetes being some the competitors in that war. I think the community and just is something that sort of help flips of the coin for Kubernetes is that there's a really, really, really big community behind Kubernetes. And there also was back then. And then sort of this open vendor neutral theme that the Cloud Native Computing Foundation is sort of pioneering is something that is really applicable to many. I think community is a big thing why Kubernetes actually won this, because Docker Swarm, that we had the big D Docker, the company behind, they needed to make money. So that's probably why they sort of went away again. Many hated when they sort of put in Docker Swarm into the Docker daemon. Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably why the Docker Swarm didn't win that war. And in terms of Mesos and I think maybe complexity, it was really, really at scale companies that were using Mesos back then. So maybe it was, yeah, not sort of the right solution for.
Yeah, but all it was almost too abstract. Like you just had a bunch of resources and you wanted to run workloads on them. But I think you actually needed to bring your own controller if you wanted to actually run the workloads then.
Yeah, you needed bring your own scheduler on top or whatever it might be that you want one.
And Kubernetes came with one per default, so it was sort of easier to get running, I guess.
Yeah,
but this was before I started using Kubernetes.
It was tailored to Docker and Docker, the momentum behind running Docker and sort of Dockerizing and containerizing your applications was probably also, so now we have Docker containers, we don't need a big system that can deploy binaries and cron jobs or whatever Mesos also did. So Kubernetes was just built for Docker containers, right? And that maybe also had an effect back then.
Yeah. Mesos had the opportunity or ability to not run Docker containers. They could run any kind of workloads. I think it was a good idea to standardize on running Docker containers. I believe.
We'll see.
The verdict's still out.
One of the things I find very interesting here is that all of the different points we just mentioned, why Kubernetes is awesome, right? With managed clusters and extendability and uniform APIs that can do everything. These are all the specific reasons why HashiCorp says we should use Nomad, because it doesn't have all that stuff. Because Nomad is a single binary. You can run it everywhere by yourself. You don't need to have managed clusters. There's no big extensibility setup that makes everything difficult and complex to do. It's just scheduling workloads on your nodes. And it throws Docker containers and not Docker containers for Nomad, at least. So I'm looking forward to see in the future if you'll go towards a more simplified setup again, at least for all the not really huge projects that actually need to be able to extend.
There is a lot of complexity in running Kubernetes and getting it running and keeping it running and upgrading it. There's a lot of complexity in that.
Definitely.
Yeah, but that's also changed, right? Because that's what the cloud providers are trying to take care of for you. It was really complex in the beginning when you had to do everything the hard way. It's because how Hightower created the hard way repo. But nowadays, it's basically just clicking a button in AWS or Google Cloud or whatever, and you have a cluster and they manage the control plane for you, or even maybe the worker nodes as well. And you just need to put in how many worker nodes do I need and what type of instance should they be. So it's just become a lot easier to run a Kubernetes cluster because of the managed services that is provided for you.
Yeah. At least as long as you want it to run in a public cloud, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to run it on your own hardware or you want to run it on point-of-sale systems in a shop or whatever, then it becomes interesting and difficult again, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that the more that the cloud providers, they can provide for us as managed services, or as you said, like Nomad is a more simplified way of running container workloads. Do I, as a end user of a cluster, do I really care that I'm running in a cluster? I might, because I need to take that into consideration when I'm designing my application. How do I handle failures? How do I handle logging? But in the end, I don't really care that I'm running Kubernetes. I just want to run my app, right? Yeah. So that's, I think, something that we try to do as infrastructure or platform teams, try to abstract away the Kubernetes clusters in some way.
Yes.
Because if you're just in quotation marks, if you're just a backend developer, you want to run a service on a pod, well, go ahead. You don't need to care about what region am I in necessarily. What is my underlying container orchestrator?
I think it doesn't end right. I mean, when I do applications in my free time, I don't use Kubernetes. I just throw the container at Heroku, right? Go make run Heroku. And they'll handle some sort of orchestrator behind that. I don't care.
Yeah. So that's serverless, basically, for you.
Yeah, that's also what we've been building at Lunar as well, is that we sort of put in an abstraction layer, because developers really don't need to care about, not even Docker files maybe, because in most cases, at least at Lunar, we are Go shop. So it's the same way that we build a Docker container. And if you sort of put that over to the developer, they also need to know what is best practices for actually building a Docker container. Do not run root or as the root user and all of that, right? So, and do you really want to put that responsibility onto the developer, or is that something you as a platform provide as a service for the developers? Right. So that's at least what we sort of try to do, both in terms of Docker files, but also in terms of Kubernetes manifest and best practices for how you actually write a manifest.
But, yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because like now we've standardized on Kubernetes as the de facto runtime for running workloads in a cloud or on-premise. And now in all companies, we have these platform teams and they are now building abstractions on top of that. And we're now diversifying what it means to run an application. So Luna, you have one definition of what it means to run an application on top of Kubernetes. And in other companies, they might have another. So now we see this very, very diverse set of what is an application, how do I run it on Kubernetes, because we want to abstract away the complexity. So I see it's now diverging in all sorts of directions. And then maybe in a few years, it will probably converge again, and we will now have a standard way. So this is an app.
Like, yeah. I think that a lot of companies are building their own platforms as it is right now. And that's probably because the right solution is probably has not yet been built, maybe to sort of embraces all of these different aspects of running in a cloud native ecosystem, because there's a lot of things that you need to take care of. We have like the cloud native landscape, which is, 1,000 projects or something like that, right? Mm. If you need a platform where you can actually sort of hook in whatever you need as an organization, perhaps we need logging from a specific vendor or something else. And we need a platform where we can plug in the different solutions for the different problems that we're trying to solve. And we haven't probably not seen that platform out there yet.
Mm-hmm.
At least we haven't found anything that we sort of see. We can use this and build on top of that. But we chose Kubernetes for that and just build on top of Kubernetes. So Kubernetes for us is sort of the foundation that we build on.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now in its fifth season, Inspiring Tech Leaders is the podcast that talks about technology strategies, challenges, and breakthroughs shaping today's digital world. Each week, Inspiring Tech Leaders brings you technology reviews and interviews with visionary CIOs, CTOs, and industry pioneers. Whether you're leading a tech team or just love innovation, Inspiring Tech Leaders is your go-to source for inspiration and real-world advice. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
Okay, so I mean, one of the themes that I'm picking up from your discussion here is that Kubernetes might be more of a tool to build platforms on, rather than, let's say I'm a developer at home doing a hobby project, and it's probably overkill, right? Unless I'm doing it to learn, right? So if you are in that position that you're a developer on a small project wanting to pick up some of these skills, is Kubernetes the right way? I think you mentioned before that Kubernetes is just one implementation of a container orchestration platform. Are there others that are more suited to that kind of situation?
Yeah, maybe. So that would lead us to the serverless theme or what do you call it, concept. Because Kubernetes is very, very low level in a sense. Like you're still building a platform, you still need to bring all these things that the platform doesn't come with. And if you want to do, if you just want to run a Docker container, go for something serverless, go for Cloud Run or AWS Lambda or Fargate or whatever. Because if you just have an HTTP service listening on some port, logging to standard out, that's okay. Just run the service and scale it for me and do the magic. I think Kubernetes in some ways is too low level for those kind of workloads. Like you said, you mentioned Heroku, right? Heroku is the old serverless offering, or you know, Google App Engine is also a serverless offering.
Yeah, I think the problem with those types of services is that they are, you need to sort of create your application and sort of make it fit with the whatever runtime they are sort of running. I think the abstraction of having and building your own containers and just using that for some platform, you mentioned Fargate or what's it called, serverless instances on AWS. In Azure, and Google has something as well, where you just Cloud Run. Have a Docker container, run this for me. I don't really care where this thing is running. Things that abstraction makes a lot of sense to have the runtime. Also in terms of testing locally, you can be sure what was the good old Docker term and sort of this pitch where it runs on my, it works on my machine, or something like that, right? But you can test it locally and you can ship it somewhere else and it works the same way because the runtime is sort of packaged up in the container.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's also really interesting. Projects in sort of the cloud native ecosystem around this, providing a serverless whatever that means platform on top of Kubernetes, or you can hook into the if you are again on a cloud provider, you have the option to actually hook in Fargate or something like that using a project called Virtual Kubelet, where you can hook in these providers and you can schedule your using Kubernetes to schedule your applications to actually execute on a serverless container instance somewhere. So there's, room for everything. But I think having the container as this that this artifact that you sort of move around makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the serverless offerings that you mentioned, they all support running a Docker container, right? So, for instance, Google App Engine, if you use the standard, type, then you... you choose a runtime, so you choose Go, you choose Java, you choose Python in some version that they support.
Mm.
But you can also use the flexible engine where you just give them a Docker container, then they will run for you. And it's the same with Fargate. So the Docker container is still the unit of execution, if you will. How you orchestrate it, how you schedule it, that's implementation details.
Yeah, exactly. But something like Lambda, you can choose to run, let's say, just Node something. But of course, that is under the hood, probably being packaged in the Docker container and executed in some way or form as well.
Yeah.
But they are sort of managing that runtime. So just having the runtime is, for me at least, it's very, very nice to have compared to the good old Heroku days where... Well, you made something run locally and then it crashed once you pushed your open master.
Yeah, but if you want nowadays, you can also just do...
Yeah, probably. You can do
it. But I think as for a learning platform, I think it makes a lot of sense of running a Kubernetes cluster at home.
Yeah.
There's always something interesting you can spin up at home and say, well, I want to run my own web server or... chat client or whatever people want. Yeah. Whatever people are running at home. And it may not be the first cluster you spin up that's the most stable one.
don't put your kids' photos on there.
At least back them up as well.
Yeah.
Until they figure out how persistent volumes work. But I think as a learning platform, it's a great thing to run at home. And there are Kubernetes distributions now, right, that are very small, K3D or K3S, that you can run on your Raspberry Pi, that you can run on whatever hardware you have lying around.
It's definitely become a lot easier. So I wrote a masterpiece in 2016 where we built Raspberry Pi clusters, Raspberry Pi Kubernetes clusters. And that was the hard way to make that thing work. Nowadays, it's just K3S with K3S up Ketchup project is out there when you can just point it to an IP address and it will bootstrap the Raspberry Pi cluster for you, basically. So it's become a lot easier and it makes a lot of sense to have a physical small Raspberry Pi cluster, at least because now you can sort of interact with the introduce failures, pull out a network cable and stuff like that and see what is actually going on. It's a really nice sort of changeable tool to understand what is actually going on in the cloud somewhere, because in the end, it's just somewhere else, somebody else's computer, right?
Yeah. I think it's also a good platform for experimentation, especially if you combine it with Helm, which is coming a de facto package manager for running cloud native workloads. So if I want to run Similar Cube, I want to run Jenkins, I want to experiment with something new that I haven't done before, just Helm install and then you see it running. I think that's much, much easier than the old days of apt-get install, whatever, then you need to configure stuff. I think there's a common abstraction layer that Helm provides that makes it easy to experiment and install the things that you need inside the cluster.
Yeah.
Prometheus or Grafana, whatever you want to install. That's easy to install because we have Helm. I don't know, you're not the greatest fan of Helm, but I think it's a good way to run things quickly.
Yeah, it is. It really is. That's also, if now we are talking K8S at home, that's a really nice project out there as well. It's K8S at home, I think the repo is. But that is actually just Helm chance for how you can run your home, your house on top of Kubernetes, home assistant and all the smart home appliances that works really well. So it's just Helm install home assistant, and now you need load balance, and now you need some Zigbee network or whatever. It's just everything running on a Kubernetes cluster at home. So you can use Kubernetes to control your home if you like.
You're feeling both.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a fun project. So you mentioned K3S a couple of times. Could one of you just put a few words onto what that actually is?
Sure. So it's a tool from Rancher originally, right? Where they took the big Kubernetes distro, the big Kubernetes GitHub repository, and they cut away everything that's not needed for a minimal cluster. So the big Kubernetes distro at that point at least came with a lot of integration to different cloud providers and how to get a disk from Google and how to get a load balancer from Amazon or whatever, right? And all of this you don't need if you're just running a minimal Kubernetes distro on a piece of hardware. Yeah. So they cut all that out, and they cut out the whole running a etcd distributed database between all of your working nodes. Just embedded a SQLite,
yeah.
SQLite database, and basically removing all the not essential stuff from the Kubernetes core and package it up as a very small binary containing everything. A bit like Nomad's philosophy of running everything in one binary, and then allowing for a bit of extensibility with plugging in that one load balancer need or ingress controller or whatever it is.
Okay, so and is it a stretch to say then the stuff that you can do with Kubernetes you can do on K3S as well? I mean, except the let's say platform specific things like load balancer from Amazon or the disk from Google.
Yeah, you can still do those as well. You just have to add in the driver yourself instead of Kubernetes coming bundled with it. You can do by now everything you could with a classic Kubernetes cluster, I would say. You can do HA, and you can still plug in a distributed database to have the high performance and high scalability and the security of running multiple master nodes and stuff like that. But you can also just run single node cluster with the master on the worker node and getting started very fast with running Kubernetes at home or on your one virtual machine or whatever you have.
Yeah, and if that's what you want, there's also other projects out there that kind that makes you run Kubernetes locally again on just in Docker. So the only prerequisite here is Docker. So you can run Kubernetes in Docker. It's becoming an inception, right? But basically, it makes it just easy to run a Kubernetes cluster local on your machine. And there's multiple other projects out there for getting a local cluster up and running, and Docker even comes bundled with a cluster if you like as well.
Hmm. Okay, so is that something you would recommend? I mean, you're mentioning that it's good for testing things locally and running things on your machine, but would you also use that for, let's say, a small scale production environment? Like, let's say you don't really have users yet. You don't know if it's going to take off. So maybe the full investment in the big Kubernetes, so to speak, maybe you don't know if that's going to pay off. Would that be a viable option?
That's your talk, right, Lesen?
Yeah, that's Yeah. I wouldn't do it with Kind, because Kind is really, really focused on ephemeral clusters, and it kind of was built to run the Kubernetes testing suite. So when the community is building Kubernetes, they run Kind to do their conformance tests. So I wouldn't do it at the Kind. It's so easy to create a cluster and so easy to destroy the cluster. I am running things in production with K3S. And depending on the project and depending on the obligations that you have, like, do we need to have 99.999% uptime? Then maybe don't go for K3S with a single master node, and then, like, you don't get high availability with just that one machine. But we're not fooling ourselves. We know that. I choose it with open eyes, saying I don't really need that highly available system. And for that, it runs very, very, very well. Super lightweight, doesn't take a lot of resources, really, really stable, I would say, and it you don't even need a Docker because now the runtime is containerd inside K3S, so which is another container runtime. Do it for small projects, definitely. Don't use Kine for it, I think.
Yeah, I think also don't use Kubernetes, maybe just from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Focus on actually providing some value for whatever business you're trying to do. Maybe nowadays, again, Docker is the standard. Maybe start there because that would make your job a lot easier when you sort of decide to move into a platform like Kubernetes. So just Dockerizing from start would probably be a good idea. But you don't really need Kubernetes in the beginning. Start using some of the Fargos and whatever serverless containers out there and use that. And if you at some point need to scale out, you could probably do that on that service as well. Mm-hmm. But if you want to build your own platform, then probably nowadays use a managed service if you're on a cloud provider and find a good partner if you're on bare metal or something like that, because there's a lot of companies and projects out there that are sort of helping people get up and running on bare metal as well. So it really depends on the scale, but focus on the business and provide the value to the customer before you invest a lot in running Kubernetes.
Exactly. Like if you want to have the learning experience of Kubernetes, like what is the learning experience? The end goal is to run an application, and Kubernetes is just a tool to help me do that. But unless I have the application that I want to run, then Kubernetes doesn't do anything for me. Like I can install all these management tools, but in the end, I want to install some app that helps my end user.
Yeah.
And when you have that app and you know what you want to build, then you can start picking from the Kubernetes toolbox.
Exactly.
I think that's good advice. I think we as an industry tend to get a little bit carried away with the tooling.
Really?
There's a lot of hype-driven development, I think.
Conference-driven
development as well. Resume-driven development too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good advice in general. Now, just to sort of start wrapping up, one thing I'm wondering is, are there any tools out on the horizon that you're excited about? Like something that's on the way, maybe not quite there yet, or something you're really anxious to just try out?
I'm really excited about Crossplanes, which is building on top of what we talked about before, right? With everything being a resource or a custom resource in Kubernetes. The Crossplane people are building basically integrations to every single cloud provider and bare metal provider so that you can provision all the stuff you need to run your production environment directly from Kubernetes using Kubernetes. You can script all of your infrastructure, defining the YAML files for everything from clusters to databases to load balancers to DNS names and what have you not, and apply that once to Kubernetes, and the Crossplane tool will build everything for you.
Yeah, and one thing to add on top of Crossplane is that Crossplane has sort of two levels or sort of two customers, so to speak. They have the end user, the sort of the application engineer, and we have the platform engineer that are sort of defining what it means to create a database. And the cool thing about Crossplane is that you can compose and sort of provide different levels of abstraction. So for the application engineer, you can say the only thing they care about is storage for a database, right? And then as a platform engineer, you probably need to or want to have some control of where is this database actually running. Is it publicly? Does it have a public endpoint, or is it whatever it might be? So you can actually pick and choose and sort of select what kind of values that you will expose for the developer. So they have this really nice composability strategy, which is really cool. So yeah, I'm definitely on Crossplane as well, and Trust API, as we already talked about.
It allows the infrastructure team to create a tailored abstraction for the application developers.
Yeah, and actually for each cloud as well. So for the developer, a Postgres SQL instance, you really probably don't care if it runs and where it runs. So you can actually also track that away to the multiple cloud. So if you're multi-cloud and all that, then look at a Crossplane. It's a cool tool. You can also create clusters with Crossplane if you want. So
yeah. Where's the starting cluster, right? Yeah. There used to be one cluster that you start up with.
Exactly.
To bootstrap everything. Yeah. I was thinking of another tool. I want to go in another direction. I'm really excited about NATS at the moment, which is a new cloud native message queue. built from Synadia, I think the company's called. It's really, really cool. It can do clustering, it can do usual TLS, it can do authentication. Like if you think about the complexity of running Kafka, for instance, I think Nats is a super light way to get most of the capabilities of Kafka, even persistent consumers now and persistent queues for very, very little cost and very, very little operational complexity. It is super fast and it's built in Go, of course, like all good tools are. I think I'm really excited about Nats. I'm using that on a project now and it's been really, really stable and can offer a lot of performance at a very, very little resource cost.
Nice.
Yeah.
You can do end-to-end encryption with Nats.
Yes. And I think they recently added support for MQTT, so you can use it to ingest things from IoT devices now.
From your home.
From your home, yeah, exactly. and they also recently added support for WebSocket, so you can, and they have all sorts of crazy concepts. They can do now leaf nodes, they call it, so you have a node that you expose publicly that sort of becomes part of your Nats cluster, but it's managed differently. So you can run that and you can actually expose that on the internet. So you have a WebSocket from an app to a leaf node that can then talk to the master nodes in the behind the firewalls. Yeah, Nats, super cool.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, thank you very much. I think that's roughly what I wanted to cover, and we are running out of time, but it was a pleasure to chat with all three of you. I feel like you could have gone on for a couple more hours if we had some beers on the table, so let's do that next time.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech for lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.